Hi, everybody. This is Joe Brzee. I'm from the influenza division at CDC. Today I'm going to give a quick talk about an exciting project that we're engaged in for the past year and we'll be engaged in for the coming years that I think will make your lives easier, at least in how to communicate the value of influenza vaccines in your communities. So the project is called the Influenza Vaccine Program Effectiveness Project, and let me just tell you a couple of things about it. But let me start with this. This year is the 52nd now anniversary of the influenza vaccine recommendations first made by the Public Health Service in 1960. Even back then, it was clear that there were certain people at high risk, and those people benefited from being vaccinated annually with influenza vaccine. Now, if you cut to 40 years later, in 2000, we were still vaccinating those people. The recommendations hadn't changed too much in the 40 years since the first recommendation. But really, over the last decade, or a little over a decade, the vaccine recommendations for flu, as you all know, have changed quite dramatically. We started with expanding age indications first to older adults and to kids steadily, and finally ended up 2 years ago in 2010 with a universal recommendation for influenza vaccine in the U.S., the first country in the world to do so. And this universal recommendation really recognized a couple of things. It recognized first that everybody was at risk for severe disease from flu, and that everybody, therefore, would benefit from prevention. But secondly, also, it also recognized that there were lots of people that were at high risk of severe complications because of underlying diseases, but that didn't identify themselves as having those conditions and therefore weren't likely to get vaccinated as a result. So we thought this was an easier way to reach those high-risk people, but also to make sure that everybody had a chance for prevention. So the problem is, of course, during the last decade, there's been lots of people getting vaccinated with influenza vaccines. There's been a greater use of vaccines in persons at high risk and more awareness of the need for vaccination generally, especially after the pandemic. The problem is, of course, there's been lots of skepticism about the value of vaccination. And so a few years ago, maybe half a decade ago or so, we started a group of activities at Flu Division along with a bunch of partners that would allow us to estimate annually the effectiveness of influenza vaccine in the United States. And so this is a sort of a schematic cartoon of what we did over the last several years. And basically, the gestalt I want you to take home is that a variety of partners around the country have tried to estimate the vaccine effectiveness in, by different age groups, depending on what the vaccine recommendations were, or in different for different outcomes like outpatient visits or hospitalizations in a variety of different ways. Now we're, if you go to the bottom right corner of this graph, we're engaged in a project called the USVE Network, in which five sites in the United States measure vaccine effectiveness in the U.S. every year. And so we've done this for a while, and we'll continue to do it. And the answer to the question we started with a few years back was, yeah, influenza vaccines do work in preventing influenza-associated illnesses in the United States. But the effectiveness of vaccines varies by season, it varies by population, and it varies by outcome measured. And therefore, we have found it very difficult, and I know you guys have too, found it very difficult to communicate the value of influenza vaccine because it's hard to communicate a vaccine effectiveness number. And as proof of that, this is a slide I like to show sometimes. And basically, it's we put a website up on our web at CDC to talk about vaccine effectiveness, what it is, how we measure it, and what the effectiveness numbers are. And in fact, you see the website is 7 pages long, which illustrates the challenges of communicating a concept, which is not very easy to understand. And the excerpt I put here was from the first page, and we use words like can vary based on and ranges widely and is challenging to measure, all to indicate that it's hard to explain vaccine effectiveness, much less to measure it. And so we thought the idea, we might make it easier, and we started a project called the Influenza Vaccine Program Effectiveness Project. And the idea here is that we start with a question, instead of do vaccines work, we start with the question, are vaccines programs effective in reducing the number of health outcomes associated with influenza? And the goal of that, then, is to estimate the number of averted influenza-associated outcomes that result from influenza vaccination. The advantages, I think, of this are multiple. First, the model or the program is meant to use data we already have, whether from influenza division on disease burden or immunization services division on vaccine coverage. And so we don't have to invest any more money to do this. The second advantage is that the illnesses or outcomes averted, I think, are an easier and more meaningful way to communicate the value of a vaccine rather than a percentage vaccine effectiveness number. Third, the estimates can be updated annually so that every year after the year, we can tell people how well the vaccine worked and where we need to do better work. And finally, fourth, we can apply economic values to the model, or we can play with a model to estimate the effect of program changes, et cetera. So the model becomes a flexible way we can ask important questions that are critical for policy. So the project has four phases. We're in the third phase right now, but the first phase was to develop the model to do this. The second phase was to apply it to retrospective data. We had 5 years worth of data, which I'll show you. The third phase was to run the model each year now after the season, and we just did that this year for the first time. And the fourth phase is, again, to apply cost data or to use the model to address other programmatic questions, such as the value of new vaccines versus for existing vaccines, and that's a future project. So let me take you through the model in a very brief way, and probably in a way that may not be totally intuitive, but I hope it is. The model really has four steps. The first step is we estimate the observed annual burden of influenza illness in the U.S., and this is with vaccine program in place. The second step is observe the risk of influenza-associated outcomes among susceptible individuals. The third is to calculate the burden of flu in populations with no vaccine. And the fourth is finally to calculate the differences in outcomes attributable to vaccine programs. And I'll explain this very briefly in a minute. I hope it'll all be clear. We started with an approach that we try to measure the effect of the vaccine program on three different outcomes. First, influenza illness. Second, influenza medically attended illness or outpatient ER illnesses. And third, hospitalizations. We didn't approach death yet, but we're starting that now, and we'll be able to estimate the impact of the vaccine on mortality shortly. So the first step is to understand how much disease is occurring each year in the United States so we know that we get a baseline. And we do this with a variety of steps, which I won't go through in any detail, but basically we start with hospitalization rates calculated in the emerging infections program sites. We get rates, age-specific rates of hospitalization with these partners each year. So then we take those data and we correct for under-detection. And under-detection in this system occurs either because people come in with flu but don't get tested, or the flu tests they use aren't completely sensitive. And so by making that adjustment based on some previous studies, we come up with an expected rate of hospitalization by age in the population. We then extrapolate those rates to the total U.S. population to come up with the estimated number of hospitalizations in the U.S. by age group. We then take that and, using a known ratio of hospitalizations to all cases of influenza in the population, we come up with the number of estimated cases by age group. And then we take those estimated cases, and again, using a known fraction of people with influenza that go to the doctor, we come up with a number of medically attended cases of illness. And so that's how we calculate the disease burden each year that occurs in the presence of a vaccine program. The next step is to calculate the risk of influenza outcomes among a susceptible population. And here we're making the assumption that all the cases of influenza positive illness, whether they're hospitalizations or ER visits or people who stay at home, occur in a population that are at risk. And the population at risk really is the fraction of the total population in the U.S. that haven't been protected either from vaccination or from being immune because of acquiring prior illness during the year. And so this is where the vaccine effectiveness and vaccine coverage comes in. So as an example, if you start with a population of 1,000 people and you, in September, nobody gets sick, say, the population at risk at the end of September is just 1,000 people minus the people that have been effectively vaccinated. And the people that have been effectively vaccinated in this case is just the vaccine coverage, 15%, times the effectiveness of the vaccine, which is 60%. And so at the end of the month, you have 910 people who are still susceptible to get infected going forward. And then if you know the vaccine coverage by month, and you know the vaccine effectiveness won't change by month, and then you can count the number of illnesses that occur in the population by month that we did in the first step, what you see is that the population at risk is dynamic. It changes over time. It declines over time. The next step is to take the population at risk by month and come up with an attack rate. And the attack rate, we know the number of illnesses that have occurred that month, and now we know who's at risk that month. And we come up with a month-specific attack rate and also an age-specific attack rate, which I didn't show here. So the next step is to take those risks that we calculated among susceptible population and assume that all the U.S. population is susceptible because there's no vaccine program. And so in this case, you start with 1,000 people, and you know the risk of illness by month, but the only way your population risk changes is because you drop out the people who have been sick and are therefore no longer susceptible to get sick. You don't have any vaccinations, so the population at risk doesn't decline as quickly. So the fourth step is then just subtract. You just subtract the difference between expected outcomes without vaccination and the annual disease burden. And what you get is in the next slide. There's three slides like this, and don't look at the numbers because they're still a work in progress. The numbers will change as we go forward and we refine the model. But the point of this is, there are two things. Look at the column that says all ages. You see that by year, we have five study years, that the number of prevented influenza cases varies dramatically by year. So you have a low year where 840,000 cases were estimated to have been prevented, and you have a year where 5 million cases were estimated to have been prevented. This all varies because of the force of infection of the virus, the disease burden, the vaccine coverage, and the vaccine effectiveness each year. The other thing you see is that it varies by age group. So look at the first year, 2005-06. We estimated that half the prevented cases occurred in elderly people over 65 years. If you look at the next year, only 25% of the prevented cases were among the elderly. And this is probably related to the subtype-specific attack rates that we know vary year by year, subtype by subtype or type by type. And so lots of variability by year, lots of variability by age group. It's difficult to predict or impossible to predict ahead of the season. We can create these tables for medically attended illnesses listed here and hospitalizations listed here. But the summary really is a few things. First, that there's a substantial annual averted disease burden from influenza vaccine programs in the United States. It varies by season, it varies by age group, and it varies because of variability to lesser extent for vaccine coverage, which steadily goes up, but by vaccine effectiveness in the annual disease burden because of the force of viral infection each year. We think that having a standardized framework to evaluate the vaccine impact annually is key because it allows for comparison across seasons and allows us to understand the impact of different parts of the model, helps us identify and prioritize data needs to evaluate program impact on a regular basis. But most importantly, I think it helps us communicate the value of influenza vaccine. We can say that last year vaccine reduced hospitalizations by X or Y, rather than last year we think the vaccine was closely matched and should have had a good effectiveness. So we think this is going to be a very concrete way to talk about the value of vaccine, and then a concrete way to estimate the economic impact of a vaccine program as well. Finally, we'll continue to make program improvements, and the model will show us that in fact, if we want to reduce illness in the elderly, we should increase the non-elderly people, we should increase coverage, and if we want to increase prevention in the elderly, we have to make better vaccines. Thanks to everybody who helped with this project. The status of the project is we're still working on the model. We'll produce the five-year review hopefully in the next couple of months, and then we'll begin the annual reviews each year in the fall is our plan. Thanks very much. Yeah.